dbkmediaservices.com. You are listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk Podcast. SVC Sports Talk is brought to you by SVCSportsZone.com and Triple Crown Sports. Now, here are your hosts for the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk, Shane Combs and Matt Combs.
Hello, SVC fans, and welcome to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk, which is, of course, the podcast show of SVCSportsZone.com. I'm Shane Combs, and I am joined by my brother Matt, and we're also joined this week by Jeremy Ward, as the three of us will get together here for the first time all together and just kind of break down a lot of different topics that you, the fans, have had in the inbox, and as well as our phone number. Matt, as you come into the show here, I want to get your reaction from the week that was in the SVC. Give me some things that jumped out at you.
Well, it's always an interesting week. I think the week one in football, you know, provides, eight games we can talk about a little bit and kind of reflect on. And then, of course, volleyball got hot and heavy this week with two of the league favorites going at it. So, there's quite a bit to talk about really in this first week.
Well, as I said in the opening there, Matt and I are real excited to welcome Jeremy Ward with us. There's been several times over the last year where Matt and I have done some shows together, or Jeremy and I have done some shows together, or maybe we've had some different segments where we've all been involved. But this week, we're going to try it with all three of us at the same time because we think it'll make for some pretty good discussion and hopefully give you, the fans, some different perspectives. Jeremy, I'll ask you the same thing here. As you look back over the week that was in the SVC, give us some thoughts.
I think it's always interesting week one football-wise, but, you know, I think you could say that in any sport where, the ideas that you have about everybody and the kind of predictions and the preseason hype, if you will, what that really looks like when you put the uniforms on and the scoreboard actually matters for the first time. So it's kind of like the contender pretender. You get a little clearer picture when you see it count.
Well, guys, where I want to start this week is looking at a little objective versus subjective. People have heard me joke before. I've never really ended up jumping over to the side of media, or I've never really looked at myself as media when I do the website, even though I guess I am. And I want to talk objective versus subjective. And first, let me give you my viewpoint, and I'm interested to get your guys' take because I think you guys give a couple different perspectives. A lot of times I'm looked at it as being a Uniota grad, and maybe, we've heard the jokes on some of the emails in the past shows of me wearing the purple and gold, or maybe this year I've been viewed as maybe being too hard on the Uniota volleyball team, and there's been some things. And I guess when I look at being biased or unbiased, I look at having a connection now to Paint Valley far more than a Uniota. If I look back at some of the girls I've coached, I would have to be more careful not to be biased toward an Aaron Riley or a Taylor Baker or a Faith Davis or a Cameron Bob or Ivan Neese over at Huntington, and that whole sophomore class that I've watched play, or being a baseball coach trying to properly give an honest opinion of those boys in another sport, be it a football or basketball. Jeremy, I'll start with you because I know you probably ended up running into this a little bit with Uniota being the best softball team in the league and you jumping on board and being kind of our softball guru and giving us a breakdown of everything. Did you find it at hard times to balance being honest? Because, again, obviously Uniota was the best, so a lot of times they were our lead story, but at the same time not trying to come across as someone who's just quote-unquote wearing the purple and gold.
Oh, right. And like you said, it's a fine line. You don't really want to give the perception that, you're completely biased and nobody wants to listen to you because of that. But at the same time, people understand the situation that you're in. So you have to respect your listener. You have to respect your audience and not try to sugarcoat everything to the point where, they're not buying anything that you have to say. So I do think that's a difficult task. And you just try to be honest and you try to be respectful, to the horses that you have in the race as well as everybody else out there listening.
Matt, you know, now that you're a parent, you're getting into a little bit more of maybe those subjective feelings and some different things that go into having an opinion. What's some of your take when you hear, you know, me talk about a Paint Valley kid that maybe I coach in baseball and I'm talking about them in basketball, or maybe it is a case where I'm just trying to give my opinion on Uniota, be it a graduate of 20 years ago or not. What's some of your take when you look at the subjective versus objective?
Well, I think anytime you talk sports, bias comes into play. I mean, we all have teams that, you know, whether we're talking high school sports or even professional sports, college sports, we all have teams that we like or teams that we have a connection to in one way or the other. You know, we're no different than anybody else. I mean, the big boys, you know, like Mike and Mike in the morning, you know, Mike Greenberg loves the Jets. He makes no bones about it. You know, I mean, he's a Jets fan. You know, we all have teams that we either like or we have a connection to. You know, for me, I mean, I think everybody knows I'm a Uniota guy, and that's where I grew up, and it's a school that I care a lot about, and my kids, you know, are starting to go there this year. But, you know, I've been far enough removed from it where I feel like I can make an honest opinion just from what I see. But like you said, there's always going to be you as a teacher, Shane. You know, those kids mean something to you. You coach them, you teach them. That's always going to be in the back of your mind. But I agree with what Jeremy said. I think we're all capable. I'd like to think we're all capable of giving our honest opinion. I mean, you know, I know you and I know Jeremy, and one thing we all are is pretty honest, brutally honest at times. So I think, you know, I think we all try to accomplish that.
Well, and I think the balance is sometimes, you know, when I talk about a connection to the Paint Valley girls, you're not going to hear me come on the website and say that I think a Paint Valley volleyball team can finish in the top two or three of the league. That's unfair to them. Plus, I'm not doing my job of giving an honest opinion. But at the same time, I think if, quote unquote, you're being hard on someone, I think sometimes that's a compliment, because you see the potential and you maybe you are putting some expectation on them. But as Matt and I talked about last week, and Jeremy, this way would be great to get your perspective, because Matt and I talked last week about expectations and responsibilities and things like that. Sometimes that just comes with the responsibility of being good, doesn't it?
Well, it does. And the bottom line is, you know, when you talk about those things, and people are going to react different ways, and different kids, different you know, different adults that may be fans are going to react differently to that target per se. And you know, if you put a target on somebody and you put it out there, you know, ultimately they're going to need to deal with it the way they want to deal with it. And they're going to handle that and either take it as a positive and as a vote of confidence, or they're going to, you know, take it as a, you know, a challenge. So either way, they can use it for motivation, in my opinion. So I don't view that as a negative. And any type of bias, any type of, you know, expectation that you put on a certain group or certain group of people or certain school, that shows your passion. And as fans, if you don't have that passion, nobody, you know, there's not going to be any conversation without that passion. So I think there's got to be a little bit of that to make it interesting. And there's got to be somebody that disagrees with you. So you want there to be more than just honest, open, objective thinking to any conversation, so that you really get to the meat of the issue and make it debatable.
Let me throw this in too. You know, let's face it, guys, you know, we're doing a show here about high school kids. So obviously I think we've always tried to juggle, you know, good conversation with protecting kids too. You understand what I'm saying? We don't, right. You know, there's times where we'll be at a game and we might see some kid do something that, you know, would be a great discussion point, but these kids are teenagers. You know, it's not the same as talking about professional athletes where you can just call them out, you right. know. So we've never done that on this show. We've never just called kids out for something. We've always tried to be protective of the kid. Normally when we mention a kid by name, like Shane said, even if we're saying this kid could improve at this, the only reason we're talking about that kid is because he or she's pretty good already.
Right. And recognition. You're recognizing the talent.
Well, and I think the point there goes back to what I was saying at the beginning. It's far more difficult for me to give an honest opinion of a Lacey Stanforth, you know, be critical or good, you know, in terms of she's a softball player, she's pole vaulting track, she's a volleyball player, she's a basketball player, because that's a kid I've had in class, and that's a kid that I've coached, and that's a kid that I have had good rapport with. And I think that's what makes for the good topic here. You know, I've always been impressed. The one thing, obviously, Laura Smith, we're going to talk about later. I think even Mike Smith goes through this a little bit on KKJ. I've always thought he does such a good job and such a professional job of when he, you know, does a dean of volleyball games and so forth. So I think it's an interesting discussion. I think it's something that I probably haven't even been aware of until you start to get some different feedback and some different things going on. But it's definitely fun to look at. Fans, we have a great show. We start on the other side of our first break with me telling you the truth about football. Everybody get up. Well, on the website this past week, as we know, Football Friday Night coming up, leading up to that point on the Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday there on the website, I had an article out talking about football, pretty much in our culture becoming the most popular sport. I think that's a fair assumption, or at least a fair opinion. And I kind of was putting the thing out there, is it the product of the game or is it the social event, and maybe the balance of both? Now, I won't go too much into my opinion because obviously I've stated my opinion. You can still see that article. It's right there on the front page of svcsportzone.com. And guys, just to give a brief overview, I talked about fantasy football and about the work week and how it's once a week. And even when Ohio State's playing Buffalo, people ask, where are you watching the game? And I was really asking, do people really enjoy watching it, or is it such the social gathering that makes it go? You know, I'm really interested to get some feedback. Matt, I'll let you jump in there and go first.
Well, I think, first of all, in the article, I thought you did a nice job writing it. I do think you probably grossed some people out with your diet, you know, when you got into that a little bit with the applesauce and pasta, although I have to agree with you, I kind of like that mix too. But as far as the football goes, you know, it is, I believe both ways on this a little bit, because I do believe that it is the most popular sport in our country. But I believe that the reason it is because of more of the social side of stuff. I think, you know, if you watch college football on TV, for instance, you know, College Game Day was at Clemson the other day. You know, thousands of fans just going crazy behind the set of, you know, the ESPN guys. And all those fans aren't pure, true football fans. You know, they're there to have a good time with their friends. You know, there's a lot of people, and anybody that goes to Ohio State games, like I have over the years, the tailgating before the games, you're throwing cornhole, getting you something good to eat, hanging out with your friends. That's as big a part of it for a lot of people as the game itself. I mean, you'll have your diehards that sit on the edge of their seat and live and die by every play. But there's out of those 100,000 people that are there every Saturday, there's a huge, huge chunk of people that are there socially. You know, they're there, they want to win, but they're not living and die by it. It's a social event. And I think you see that at the high school level too. I mean, it's Friday Night Lights, you know, it's exciting. It's fun to go outside to watch a sporting event under the lights, see people, you know, from the community coming together. and football, is that at the high school level. And really, it's by far really the most attended sport at any level, right. College and at high school. I mean, you'll hear people say, well, so-and-so's football team wasn't very good. Their basketball team was good. I bet they made more money at basketball or brought in a bigger gate. That's false. That doesn't happen hardly ever anywhere. Football drives the financial bus. I mean, you know, the school, now that I'm AD, I see these numbers. You know, our basketball team last year, we were fortunate enough to be 19-5, have a nice year. Had several more home games, obviously, than football does, because they only, you know, play five or six home games.
Or four sometimes.
Yeah, four sometimes. And you know, the football team goes 1-9, and I'm here to tell you, the football team still brought in more money than the basketball team. I mean, that's the way it goes. Now, people love to go to football games on Friday nights. It's once a week. They can budget that into their spending money. You know what I mean? It just is the way it is. But I do think a lot of times it's more social than it is pure football fans. If you're a baseball fan, and like we are Reds fans, you have to be a pure baseball fan to sit down and watch 145 games a year like I probably do out of 162, you know, because it doesn't have that same social, let's get our buddies together and get a bite to eat, you know, as football does. But I think football is a huge social event.
Well, Jeremy, that's the point I was going to throw at you is I've had some football people react to me this week. You'll get some of the common fans saying, oh, I like the hard hits, or I like the nature of the game. And then you'll get some of your football purists that'll say, you know, I can sit down and watch a game and know that it matters, where if the Reds lose today or tomorrow, they can still make the playoffs. It's one of 162, where if the Bengals or the Browns or whoever your favorite team is, or the Buckeyes, if they're opening this week, you know, they're playing a game that's probably got more importance to it than any one baseball game all year for the Reds. So I guess you're a big sports fan. What's your reaction to the article and to some of that feedback?
Well, you know, it was an interesting piece, and, you know, it got me thinking, and the perspective I looked at it was how I've always believed that football kind of sets the tone for the other sports. I think football is your recognizable communication with the outside world when you're school personnel. That's your best link to the community. And that's really where you sell yourself. So I think it's important to put a good product out there, whether it's, you know, doing the best you have with the team that you have is one part of it. But I think it's also on the part of the school, the athletic director, the coach, the principal, to make it an event that people want to come to make it social, to have different things going on that draw people in, because this is your opportunity to involve your community and gain that support and be able to rally around something. And, you know, there's plenty of people that walk out there and walk home from those games and back to the car and they don't know the score. You know, I always joke with my kids, what's the score of the game? You know, they don't necessarily know, but they know that's what you do. And I think it's kind of that social standard that it sets. And I think maybe because it's the fall, it's the beginning of the year, it's just so important for a school to have that link to their community.
Well, that's a great point. I know Terry Hill had sent an email to the inbox, really well-written piece, and he was given a lot of different reasons football is such a great sport and why we love to watch it. But I almost felt like if it's a really passionate fan, I don't know that we can truly answer this question that I'm asking. But Jeremy puts a neat twist on it there, Matt. You as an AD now in the fall, do you see a little bit of that community connection that he's talking about and how it connects to other sports?
Well, yeah, and I think Jeremy hit it on the head. As an AD, let's say, or even, like he said, other administrators, you've got to do a good job, because you can't guarantee that you're going to be good in terms of wins and losses, you know what I mean? But right. You've got to do a good job of attracting people or making it the type of social gathering that people want to come to, even if your team's, isn't very good. You know, whether it be, obviously, everybody has their homecoming night, that people have a reason to come, or, you know, we've done things like, hey, it's peewee football night, or, you know, all the peewee kids get in free tonight, and and we announce them and bring them out on the field or whatnot. And I think, I mean, I went to a game a couple years ago at Uniota that obviously I didn't really know much about either team in terms of the personnel, and I took my son, who at the time was like 3 years old. He was jacked up that a helicopter landed on the field and brought the football down there, man. That's all he talked about for like 2 days. I mean, he was sold. I mean, every night, every Friday night, can we go over there where the helicopter is, you know? And so just little things like that, just whatever it takes to make it a gala event, so to speak, you know what I mean, that brings people out. I think Jeremy hit that right on the head.
Well, the connection to the other sports is something that really goes well into this next section, because some of the other comments that started to get generated from this was something that I've talked to both of you on past podcast shows in the past couple years about, and that's our numbers in all sports. And we've talked a little bit about our little league, and we talked a little bit about our junior high and kids starting earlier, perhaps they quit earlier. And that's not really where we're going here. We're not looking to see what's caused the problem. We're looking a little bit more for a solution. And fans, you can always get involved, 740-569-3254. We had a great call from a local parent this week asking about numbers and the problem it is causing in the SVC.
I had a question for SVC Sports Bang podcast. As a parent of a JV player, I have a concern about, especially during basketball and football, girls basketball, boys football, that numbers are dwindling and some games are not being played or only two quarters are being played. What can the league do to fix this problem? Thank you.
Well, I appreciate that call. Again, that's 740-569-3254. Now, guys, there's two or three directions I want to go with this, because I think this call is really, really good for some things that need to be discussed in our league. First, I just wanted to get your guys' perspective, because you're both parents and I am not. Are you a little bit surprised with the direction we've gone in this particular topic, that more parents haven't had a voice and that schools haven't been forced to be a little bit more proactive in attacking some of the scheduling issues here? Jeremy, I'll start with you there. What's your reaction to that?
If you knew how many conversations that I've had with various people, and I'm talking from all levels, I've had this conversation in the past year countless times about, you know, how do you fix this, or what's the problem, or is it right that so-and-so doesn't have a JV team, or so-and-so won't play a full JV schedule, or, you know, whatever it may be. Seventh grade football. We have the issue with seventh grade football come up. Sometimes some schools can have a junior sure. high team and not seventh grade, and it's happened occasionally in basketball even. So, you know, how do you fix this? How do you solve this? And is it an indicator of the success of your program, or is it vice versa? All these, you know, conversations that we have had. And I think you said it best in the opening. I think everybody can identify the problem and everybody can acknowledge the problem, but, you know, what kind of solutions do we have? And asking the league to solve the problem, I don't know how that's done. Obviously, it's a collective issue that certain schools are looking at it in one capacity and other schools are looking at it another way. And, you know, to be honest, I've talked over and over and over again, and I don't know that I have an answer. You know, I don't know that I have a strong opinion of how to deal with the problem.
Well, Matt, I've got to ask you this, because I know you several times publicly on this show have not been very happy with the TVC, the Tri-Valley Conference, where Vinton County's a member, and you've complimented the SVC on several things they do. As you look at this as someone maybe coming from the outside of the league, do you feel like the SVC has to take a little responsibility on this, or is this a league-by-league case?
Well, I don't know what the league can do per se about, you know, a team not having enough players to, you know, play a full JV schedule or whatever. I'm going to say this, and this is going to get some people upset with me, and you're probably going to have the emails going crazy here after I say this. But the fact of the matter is, 20 years ago, 25 years ago, you did not have this problem. You did not have the problem with numbers in junior high. You did not have the problems with numbers on JV. Now, I know a lot of people are going to make the argument, well, kids have more to do today, blah, blah, blah. And I don't disagree with that totally. But let's just talk about the elephant in the room. The biggest change over the last 20 years is youth sports, peewee sports, okay, elementary age sports. Ever since that has grown and exploded, this is when this other problem has started with junior high and high school numbers being bad. Because the fact of the matter is, when kids play at a younger age, there's a pecking order that starts to develop, whether you want it to or not. Kids start to quickly figure out, I'm not that good at this sport. These other people are better than me. I'm not going to go out in junior high. I know I have a good friend who has a daughter who said to me, she's not going to go out for seventh grade basketball because she thinks she's going to get cut and she doesn't want that rejection. You know what I mean? She doesn't want to be told she's cut. All right. So, and how does she think she's going to be cut? Well, because she's played youth basketball with all these girls that she feels like is better than her. So now she has it in her mind she's going to be cut. You see what I'm saying? If the seventh grade was the first real time that everybody got together, you'd have more kids going out, more kids on the team, and less likely then to lose kids as quickly by the time they got up to JV. Youth sports, and I'm not against youth sports, you know, I'm glad they're out there. But I think the way we do it is all wrong when we start having these all-star teams, traveling teams. We start to tell kids in the fourth grade, hey, guys, these five kids over here are really good, and you five kids aren't invited because you're not as good. A pecking order starts. Kids start losing interest. Kids start quitting earlier. And I know people right now are going to be throwing darts at my picture, but I'm just saying that's the way I feel about it.
Well, Jeremy, anyone who's listened to the show knows that I agree with the Little League perspective of being the problem. And if we're going to fix it long term, we've got to fix that problem. But let me ask you this. All of these other sports, and you probably can comment on this from the bigger school, say growing up at Vinton County, now at Uniota, I know you've even been at Jackson. All of these other sports that are starting to grow, soccer, not just golf in the last 20 years and guys, but now about four or five schools have a girls golf team, wrestling, tennis teams. Do we feel like a lot of these sports have started to grow because of these kids playing all the other major sports early? And then, you know, as they get older and they start to dwindle out of those, they start to go in other directions. Is that a fair comment?
Yeah, I think it's fair. I think you've seen that. I think you've seen some really good, in particular, soccer players that maybe didn't play soccer growing up, maybe played volleyball in junior high, decided, well, it's not for me, and they say, we'll come out and play soccer. And, you know, maybe they tinkered with it when they were growing up, but they never really, you know, put a lot into it, and then end up being, you know, really good soccer players, or at least being integral parts to good teams. And, you know, so I think there's something to be said for that. Again, when it comes to addressing the issue, you know, soccer is kind of interesting because, you know, when I was growing up, soccer was really trying to push to become a varsity sport and not just a club sport at these schools. And you can see as the SEC continues to add soccer programs, but it's still remarkable that there are a lot of kids that don't play, especially at the junior high level, because they play club and they're not even on the school team when there was a huge push to make it part of the school. And then you have school teams where your better players aren't even playing. So that's another issue tied into this as well.
Let me say this real quick, Shane. We have I want to make it clear to people, you know, I'm not against youth sports. I want there to be stuff for kids to do, you know what I mean, and play. I mean, my son was a part of a little league team this year, enjoyed it. You know, I want kids to play sports. I just wish at the school level we would, you know, we would do things a little bit differently with our youth sports. You know, let the best players go play OYB basketball and get on a traveling team if that's what they want to do with kids from other schools. But as a school, I wish we would do a little bit less of that. Now, I'm real fortunate to where I'm at that we have some great people running our youth programs, and I think they do things pretty well. I still wish, though, that we would work more skill-based, you know, instead of game-based, where we get kids together and we try to develop skills and not worry so much about playing the games in the third and fourth grade and keeping score and seeing who wins. Let's work on skills. Or in football, I don't know. My personal opinion, second, third grade's a little bit young to have tackle football. You know, I know I have friends whose kids got hurt at a young age, maybe not seriously, but enough to where they're scared, and now they don't want to play. You know, let them grow a little bit. Let them get older. You know, you can learn a lot of the same skills in flag football. I know a lot of people are going to disagree with that. But I just think if you look at the way some of the other countries, you know, are doing their youth sports and watching their athletes grow up and have success at the professional level, I think sometimes we get things a little bit backwards in our country with youth sports. But again, I'm not anti-youth sports. I just think, and you were saying, let's not talk about the problem but the solution. But I think you have to recognize the problem in order to solve it. And I think that's one of the problems.
Well, I don't think there's any question that that's the problem. But if we're going to try to attack this person's phone call, here's a parent that has a junior high athlete, if I'm understanding it right, and a high school athlete. So, Jeremy, I'll throw it at you as a junior high AD. Is it your job as an AD, if the league's not going to take a stance and say, if you don't have these, we're not playing two quarters, it's either a full game or not, is it your job then, if Uniota has a seventh grade football team and Paint Valley, I don't know, if Paint Valley doesn't, is it your job to go out and schedule them 7 football games or 8 football games? What do you feel is your job as the AD there?
Well, I think it's got to be like an organizational decision. It's got to be between the coaches in the program, football program, your building administrators, and you need to have some sort of guidelines, maybe not policy per se, but you need to have guidelines of what you're trying to accomplish. So I think every situation is going to be different. If you have 11 seventh graders, are you going to go out and try to schedule 4 or 5 extra games, and then a kid get hurt, you run into these troubles, then you get into the dilemma, what about these 3 eighth graders that don't get to play very much? Do they play on the seventh grade team? Is it, there are so many issues. I think it's a case by case. It's a school by school decision. What are they after? I've been a part of schools where they didn't want to have JV sports. If it was close, they didn't want to have them because those are busing issues. And when you're trying to ask people for levy money, they don't want, they're concerned about, are you spending needless money on, bus trips and paying coaches when you only have a handful of kids and you can barely scrape together a team?
Well, Matt, I'll throw the same question to you then. Is it unfair to put the blame on the AD, or do we have to go higher to the principals in terms of there being a decision? Because I guess what I'm getting after is this, because I'm trying to attack the phone call the best I can here. If you are an AD at a school, or even a basketball girls coach at a school, and you have really good JV numbers, and you find out that, man, like out of 14 league games, there may be like 6 or 7 where we're only playing 2 quarters. Well, you're killing the development. You have parents paying money to get in to watch 2 quarters. I mean, obviously, that's why I say I'm surprised there hasn't been more of a voice against this. Do you feel like you've got to go out and try to get more basketball, or do you think this has to be more of an administration decision to get with the league and say, guys, this is a problem, we got to get it fixed?
Well, I don't know. Again, I don't know what in fairness to the league, I don't know what the league can do per se. I do think it's a school by school basis. I think Jeremy's right. If your school allows you the flexibility to schedule games and to travel a little bit if need be, then I do think it's your job as an AD to go out of your way to try to schedule as many games as you can. There's usually a lot of schools kind of in this boat. You will get emails as ADs that go out throughout the whole Southeast District. So and so is looking for a seventh grade game on this date. If anybody's interested, let us know. So I mean, if you work at it a little bit, you can probably get games. When you start talking about JV games, girls especially, that's what the issue was last year, where there was a lot of 2-quarter games, so to speak, in the league. I think my personal opinion is I'd rather not even see that. I would rather a school say, again, though, this comes back to finance. Are you allowed to do this? But if you're allowed to do it, hey, guys, let's not go over there and play 2 quarters. Let's see if we can call so-and-so and schedule a game on a different night.
All right, that's all I'm saying, right?
You know what I mean? So I think that's what – I would rather see that. But, again, there are financial issues with some schools. Sure. They don't want to send that extra bus. So I think it has to be dealt with on a school-by-school basis. I don't know that the league can do much about it.
Well, I know last year I sarcastically offered the 3-on-3 tournament option, but some of the hate emails didn't take kindly to that. I do want to move on a little bit because this ties in. Jeremy, last week Matt and I had an email to end the show. We were talking about fall ball with football players. So I want to go 2 different ways here. First, Matt, I want you to explain – before I ask Jeremy the question, explain to our listeners some of the new rules that's coming, actually coming up here in the next couple of days with some of the new workouts that coaches can do with players.
Yeah, the state passed a proposal, some 8.6 or something bylaw. I can't remember the number, but basically it says it lays out a plan for where coaches can do some individual workouts with players. I mean, that's the long and short of it. And I'll be honest with you, I really need to become more familiar with the other sports that I'm not associated with directly. I know the basketball rule very well. We can work out 4 guys at a time, mm-hmm. only 4 guys at a time in one gym at one place, throughout all year long except the dead period, which is August for basketball. I know every sport has a similar rule. in place, but I couldn't tell you exactly if there's any extra restrictions on football, baseball, or whatever. But basically, the state's trying to open it up to where coaches can do some individual stuff. The state's idea behind this wasn't so much to give more coaching time; it was to allow parents an affordable option to get their kids some individual instruction. Because what a lot of parents were doing, they were going out and hiring people. You know, you could go up to Columbus and hire somebody to work your kid out in basketball for an hour a week. You know what I mean? But it costs money. The state's trying to give parents a more affordable option to where their own coach can do it for free, basically. You know what I mean? Just work
where
your
before
kids out.
You weren't allowed to, you're saying.
Yeah, you weren't allowed to do that kind of thing at all, except during the season or 10 days in the summer. So it that gives you that option to do that now. And you know, I think we talked a little bit last week, and I'm sure Jeremy can comment. You know, it's going to affect some different things. Some coaches are going to have to work together and whatnot. But that, in essence, that's the rule.
Well, Jeremy, the reason I had Matt go over that is I had some really interesting feedback. It kind of generated from our fall ball football discussion last week at the end of the show. And then I've had even someone ask me here recently, someone who's really involved in sports in the SVC, ask me, how do I think it will influence, say, volleyball, for example, with girls basketball players having this option? And I guess I kind of almost said it almost serves as another excuse for a kid not wanting to play a sport or maybe concentrating on one sport. What's your overall reaction to the new guidelines that's going to start to take over our off seasons, and how do you think it can influence some of these numbers in other sports?
Well, my initial thoughts were that, yeah, that's exactly what would happen. It would just be another way for the types of coaches that you know only think of their own sport to try to hog the players. And for the kids that maybe are on the fence, just give them another reason not to play, not to be involved in other sports. But listening to you guys last week and really thinking about this, honestly, I think it gives a safer alternative to, say, open gyms or the group unstructured time that you had. Because I think a lot of times those are the reasons that kids won't play another sport. Well, I can go to open gym 2 days a week. Well, it's almost a place to meet in the middle where you can say, well, hey, I'd really like you to play volleyball. You can still go work out a couple times a week with your coach, and you know, it's not in an open gym setting where you're more likely to turn an ankle or for something goofy to happen. Right. It's much more controlled setting, and you're going to get a lot more out of it. And, you know, they know you're playing another sport, so they know you've got a certain level of conditioning and certain limitations. So I think it's a much more controlled environment that should benefit the sport that they're involved with, as well as, you know, the off-season sport that they're trying to get some extra individualized attention in. So I think it can be a positive if everybody works together and handles it the right way.
Well, fans, everything we're saying, you obviously have an opinion on as well, and we want to hear that. 740-569-3254. Really good stuff with a lot of opinions there. If you have one, again, let us hear it and let your voice be heard. Stay with us. On the other side of the break, we talk about the opening week of high school football and what we learned from what we watched. Football Friday night number one. Obviously, we always learn a little bit per week, and by the time we get to the fourth week, we seem to have a better perspective of what's going to happen. I know I was working concessions as our baseball night out at Paint Valley. Appreciate all they do for us. I know we're going to do some neat things to our baseball field, and so I had a chance to watch a little bit of the Bearcats. I know Tegan McFadden found the end zone four times. Paint Valley defense holds Lachlan to negative 59 yards of offense. Nate Yoakum, 12 tackles. Mark Clifford, 200 yards on the ground. Real impressive effort there. A lot of people making them the pick in the league. And Jeremy, if I'm not mistaken, you had a chance to take a look at Uniota the other night. And the one thing that jumps out at me here I thought was a really interesting topic is I love the Hosley kid from basketball last year. I know his freshman year, he was a kid on the court that could do a lot of different things. And I noticed on the roster when he'd come out, he was playing quarterback for the Shermans this year. Just your take on him, Eric, as an athlete and what he can offer to that program over the next 3 years.
Well, he is a tremendous athlete, and he brings a lot of excitement, a lot of potential, I think, as a skilled player in that offense. I was able to check out the game, and, you know, it was interesting. It was a typical first game. It lasted forever. There was a lot of whistles, and there's a lot of action, and there was really a lot of breakdowns. And I think even with the foundation games that help you get the jitters out and so on and so forth, that it still doesn't change at that week one. You know, everybody's still cleaning things up and really trying to get what they believe their identity is going to be, and then, you know, really using practice from here on out to solidify that. So I think there was a lot of feeling out, and there was a lot of things that you know, I think now the coaches can look at film and really pick some things up and decide which way they want to go with it.
Well, Matt, speaking of Vinton County, which was Uniota's week one opponent, I know in week two they'll play Piketon, and I know Piketon was hit hard by graduation, but I tell you, Coach Gallion does a super job. His kids come out in a rivalry game. They lose 14-7 to Waverly, but listening to Coach on the scoreboard show, I know they were driving deep with about 3 minutes to go, had fourth and inches, and mishandled a snap there and was unable to tie the game up. But I know that's been a really kind of a competitive non-league contract for about, what, 4 or 5 years now. Just as Piketon looks to week two of Vinton County, tell us a little bit about what seems to be an improved Vinton County squad.
Well, I mean, Piketon can expect Vinton County to, you know, have really good skill kids. Vinton County's pretty deep at running back. They got about three nice running backs that all share the load, you know, so to speak. And then they have a couple nice wide outs, two that have played, one playing for his first time this year, about a 6'4 athlete in Max Ward that Piketon, I'm sure, will be well aware of when they see film. But and Vinton County's got a really nice quarterback too, who took his lumps last year as a sophomore. Now is a lot better as a junior. And I think Vinton County has a pretty good football team. They're not very deep. I think their starters are pretty good, but when they have to rotate some guys in, it becomes an issue. And I think Piketon's probably in that boat a little bit too, with how many kids they lost to graduation. I'm sure they're playing a lot of young kids in certain spots. So it should be pretty interesting. The Uniota Vinton County game was competitive at spots. It just Uniota had some really – they lost their composure and had some bad penalties early, and it allowed the score to get, you know, 19-0. After that, it was pretty competitive, you know, after they settled in. But so, I mean, I think it'll be a pretty even matchup. It's awfully tough to tell with these teams this early on. So this Vinton County-Piketon game – you know, I think that's going to tell SVC fans a little bit about Piketon, and are they going to be able to deal with this graduation that's hit them so hard as we move forward this season?
Well, as we look elsewhere, other than Paint Valley, Southeastern was the only other winner. Congratulations to Evan Gallagher. I know Coach and I got to know each other teaching at Paint Valley a couple years ago there together, so I was happy for Evan that he gets off to a good 1-0 start there. And then with Adina and Huntington and Piketon, Uniota West Falls, Zane Trace losing, the thing that jumps out at me here is scheduling. You know, I know a lot of these contracts run 3, 4, 5, 6 years, and if certain teams get hit by graduation, oftentimes you'll look to maybe tweak the schedule up a little bit. And when I think of scheduling, I think of rivalries. And when I think of rivalries, a lot of times, Matt, you alluded to it earlier, you look at money and gate and then the concessions. I know we had a call about Adina McLean asking us to predict, but unfortunately we got the call after last week's recording. Bruce, do we have that call still?
Just wondering, Adina and Greenfield play the first Friday every year. Past couple weeks have been good games. Who do you think will win the game this year between Adina and Greenfield football? Thank you.
I kind of like the predictions after the fact. It makes us really intelligent. I can say that I think, you know, I think McLean will win by a few touchdowns. No, but the reason I still wanted that call to come out is I appreciate the participation in the show. The reason I thought that was so intriguing to this particular discussion is obviously Adina McLean is a rivalry. It's close. I would imagine the gate's terrific. I noticed the other night when I was working in the concession, you know, Lachlan comes from the Cincinnati area, probably didn't have more than about 30 people there. I just wondered, you know, Matt, now that you're looking at it from the AD perspective, your reaction or discussion about scheduling, winning versus the money, and some of the other administration stuff that you obviously have to be aware of when you're trying to support an athletic program.
Well, it's definitely a two-headed monster. I mean, you have the thing. People throw the term rivalry around loosely at times, I think. You know, I think, you know, what makes a rivalry, I guess you'd have to say, but you know, you have schools that maybe are close in proximity that have played for years and years and years and years. But a lot of times you'll get into a situation where those series aren't very competitive. You know, one team's dominating those series. I used the example the other night. We were talking about Jackson and Wellston, a couple schools not in the SBC, obviously. I think they had their 100th meeting this last Wow. Friday, their 100th meeting. And so people consider this a rivalry because they're both Jackson County schools, and maybe there's not a lot of love lost there, you know what I mean, type of thing. But the fact of the matter is, it's been one-sided. I mean, Wellston's won one football game in the last 30 years or something. So it's not a very competitive rivalry from that standpoint. And I'm sure there'll be some people that probably think, well, why does Wellston still play them every year if they never can beat them? You know, why not schedule somebody else that can maybe get you off to a better start to your season? And that's where those things conflict. You know, do you keep rivalries alive because of the history and the tradition and the gate? I mean, let's face it, that Wellston Jackson brings in about $10,000-$11,000 gate every year, you know. So athletic directors like that. And or do you say, let's look for more competitive balance? And we had the same situation in Vinton County with Jackson in Vinton County. Vinton County hardly ever beat them. Eventually the game got dropped. A lot of people, you'll hear some people say, that's great. We couldn't beat them. Let's play somebody maybe we can compete with. You're going to hear a lot of people say, well, wait a minute here. We made a lot of money every time that was our turn to host that game at home, you know, and they're only a half hour away and we play them every year. Why ruin that tradition and that? So there, it's like I said, it's a two-headed monster. I can see both arguments of it. You look at some of these SVC teams. I listened to the call-in show the other night, Westfall, for instance.
Right.
You know, the coach was talking about he had a real young team, a lot of first varsity game for a lot of his kids. Well, every year Westfall has a mean non-league schedule because they play the Circleville team, or they play the Pickaway County teams, you know, Circleville, Tays Valley, Logan Elm. It's been that way forever. It's going to be that way forever, probably. So you look at them, they get thrown to the fire right now, even with a young team. So it can go both ways in terms of that tradition and those rivalries and scheduling to benefit your team.
Well, and Jeremy, I'm even going to throw it. I'm not going to debate that football, you know, really drives the financial bus, but I even want to throw it into some of the secondary types of sports, even at the junior high level. You know, some schools might be looking at 350 in terms of people coming through a gate, where another school may be happy to get 100. I know volleyball wise, I've had a lot of ADs tell me there's a lot of times they'll have a varsity volleyball game where you may only get 60, 70 people. You're only looking $300-$400. Where I know the other night, I thought Alan Coker told me at the Uniota Zane Trace game, which was an amazing atmosphere, that they had nearly, you know, 400, 450 people come through the gate there. Well, you're talking in the thousands of dollars for a varsity volleyball game. There's quite a discrepancy there. How much do the numbers, and obviously when you have more kids participating, you have more parents coming, you have more grandparents coming, more aunts and uncles coming, more friends coming, how much does that start to influence every sport that we're talking about?
Oh, I don't think there's any question about that. And I think it gets back to, you know, the community involvement. If you're going to have big gates and you're going to have rivalries, it can't just be the kids that are playing and their families coming to the games. And that's what you see a lot in at some places. And you talk about atmosphere. To me, that's another reason. I mean, the atmosphere of that Wellston-Jackson football game is unreal that Matt was talking about. You allude to the atmosphere the other night, and obviously in a conference match, you knew it as Ain't Trace. You know, that's understandable. But I do think in those other sports, there's probably, you know, it takes a little foresight, but there's probably some natural rivalries between kids that grew up playing against each other or what have you that you want to kind of tap into. Just for that atmosphere, and it's certainly not going to hurt your gate. So I think you need to look at things from a big picture there. But you want to put your kids in a situation, number one, where you can have success, but you want to expose them. At the same time, you want to expose them to situations that aren't the same. You know, you don't want to give them the same situation over and over again. If you can give them something else, you know, why not make it happen?
All really good points here. And fans, as you know, we always like to pick up the pace in this part of the show, and we call it our two-minute drill. For this week's version, Jeremy will take the lead. We'll put Matt in the middle, and then I will follow. So here we go. Let's go to the two-minute drill. Let's go to the hurry-up offense.
What upcoming event has your attention in the Scioto Valley Conference?
Well, I'm going to go right back to the bias, and I'm going to go with Uniota's volleyball week with Huntington on the road and Westfall on the road. You know, I think everybody put a lot of stock in the last week's game with Zane Trace, but I'm really interested to see how these games turn out this week and really get a clearer picture on the SVC volleyball race.
Well, you know, we don't do a lot of pre-show discussion. I think that's what makes it kind of nice that we have that spontaneity, so to speak. But I'm really kind of thinking along the lines of Jeremy here with the volleyball. I think we haven't talked about it a lot in this show, but there was some, to me, there was some surprising stuff that happened this week, and some things that jumped off the page at you a little bit. And this, you know, there's games, like you said, Uniota's involved in next week that's going to further affect the standings. And I think, you know, I think every week in volleyball, from the looks of the first week, could be very interesting.
Well, Jeremy, I'm glad you went down that route so I didn't have to. Honestly, on my paper here, I went golf. And starting here on the 4th, we basically in about an 8 or 9 day stretch are going to have 3 SVC matches. Because, again, remember we had the weather at Big Beaver the other night. So on the 4th we're at River's Edge, the 11th we're at Big Beaver, and the 12th we're at Crown Hill. So here over the next week, the 10 days, we're going to know a lot about SVC golf because we'll be 5 matches into the 8-match season.
What will take much longer than just a few weeks to figure out this fall?
Well, I think the easy answer would be volleyball. We alluded to that. But I think if you look at the week one football scores, I think a lot of people that pick Paint Valley, you know, from the onset, feel pretty good about that pick. But I think it's going to take a few weeks to figure out which teams are truly going to contend for the football title.
You know, I'll go here with Player of the Year in golf. I think we talked about it a little bit in last week's show. This could be a crazy race, really, between a few guys. And you know, there's a lot, like Shane just said, there's a lot of golf to be played in a short period of time. If you're not finding your swing groove one week and you've got 3 league matches, a lot can change. So I think the Player of the Year race in golf, it's way too early to tell.
Well, I do think the easy answer is volleyball, but I'm going to be a little bit more specific here. I've had a chance to watch 4 of the 5 teams play in person, and I'm probably not going to get a chance to see Westfall in person until the following week. So Westfall off to the 2-0 start there. The big win was Zane Trace. They're the team that really kind of caught my eye here with their start. So I think here in the next couple weeks, as we get to the halfway point of the league, we'll start to have a better idea of those head-to-head matchups.
Now that soccer has 5 or 6 schools, should the SVC make it a recognized sport?
I think so. I think these kids deserve the opportunity to play for a conference championship, and I think the rivalries are developing there. And it is time for the SVC to make it recognized.
Well, I agree, and I think I don't know what the bylaws actually say. You know, I knew that it used to be you had to have 5 schools to be a league sport, but I don't know if that's automatically happens or you have to petition the league or are all these schools members of the OHSAA yet. You know, all those things come into play, but definitely, yes. I mean, if you have it, go ahead and make it a league sport. It makes scheduling easier. You're going to play both these teams twice, and like Jeremy said, kids can be up for all conference honors and league championships and stuff like that.
Yeah, I think the answer here is you have to. I think it's one of those things, as Matt said, depending on exactly how it's worded in your league bylaws there, it's something that if schools are consistently showing that they have them. I know Paint Valley, Huntington are two that with their enrollment will struggle to have them, but it seems like the other six are going to have them in some form. So I look back to golf in 93 when it first started, and here we are almost 20 years later, a huge sport growth, and even the girls' game starting to grow. So yeah, I think soccer is on its way into to the league here real soon.
The inbox had our first Fair Unfair of 2013 this week, and it was saying, three losses will definitely give a team at least a share of the title in volleyball this season.
Well, I will have to say that that's fair. Three is a big number when you really sit down and think about it. But from what I've seen, I think three losses could definitely give you a share.
I think it could, but at this point, I'm going to say that's unfair. I think it's a little too early to make that statement. I think that even though there's some parity and that the first week definitely shook things up a little bit, I wouldn't be surprised if somebody gets real consistent, like what happened last year a little bit, where somebody just sort of, you know, gets the big wins at the right time, and maybe it's more of like one or two losses. But so I might say unfair to say that so early.
Well, in the preseason, I had this as unfair because I really felt like one of those five teams would step to the front and go 12-2. But maybe I'm panicking after just 1 week. I'd have to label it fair now. In fact, I would almost go as far to say that we could have something crazy at three, maybe even four losses. The difference, guys, is this. In the past, the top team that's been so good that there might only be one or two teams that could realistically beat them. In this year's volleyball league, any of those top five teams can beat one another on a given night. Fans, we have our opinions and you have yours, and we want to hear it. Yeah, let us know your thoughts. 740-569-3254. We also want you to get involved with Twitter. Have a lot of hashtag SVC Sports Talk that we're trying to start up for the podcast show. Also join us Facebook. Shout-O-Matic. I know it was exciting the other night. I was out at the Zane Trace Uni at a volleyball game, and I was getting texts coming in saying, keep them coming. Give us some more often updates. So I was trying to shout a little bit more frequently as that exciting match went into the fifth set there. Well, guys, we're getting real close to the hour mark, and we always try to keep it around an hour with three of us running our mouth now instead of just two of us. There's a lot more to get in. But, guys, we would be absolutely cheating our great league if we didn't get this final look into the inbox, because it's talking about one of the great accomplishments in league history. It says, I know all you guys on the show coach and have coached multiple sports. I was wondering your thoughts. We're on Laura Smith winning number 600 this week. And I guess I'll get started here before I throw it to you guys. As I was looking at 1985, one school, and I guess that's the thing that jumped out at me, is when I look at how easy it is to maybe lose your job or to stay at one school or to stay in that one spot for that long, that in itself is incredible. But I think beyond that, you're talking about someone who's completely set the standard. I even had a fan out at the Zane Trace Unita game the other night talk about that, saying what an exciting volleyball match. And as the conversation went on, they even said you almost have to thank Laura Smith and Adina for setting a standard that the volleyball league was forced over the last 10, 20 years to catch up to. And I just think that's so exciting. I think it's a coach that's had such a great vision with her younger groups on up, and you know, visioning what she's going to do with certain players 5-6 years in advance. Her attention she gives to the setter position, just so many different things that are incredible in her program. I'll give you both before we close here a chance to comment on this amazing accomplishment. Jeremy, why don't you lead us off there?
I was having a conversation with a couple other coaches, and you know, we talk about how difficult it is to get to 100 wins. You know, if you have multiple jobs or if you have any type of rebuilding situation, if you're going to win 600 games, you can't have that 3, 4, 5 win season.
Right.
And then on top of that, you still have to find a way to win, you know, 15 plus when you don't have your best team. And it's just a testament to all the hard work and to the determination. But most importantly, it's how you're able to transcend, and your program kind of builds on itself, and it's it just multiplies by putting kids, you know, back into the youth program that that played for you, that start coaching the game, and it just grows exponentially.
Well, Matt, I know you've had a successful career in your own right here, a decade in. Now you take your career and triple it. Can you even fathom what Laura Smith has accomplished in an amazing career so far?
Well, the longevity by itself is impressive. Just forget about the wins for a minute. Just did you say 85? When did she start coaching?
I want to say – I don't have it in front of me. I want to say 1985, and it's all been at one school.
That's crazy in itself, okay, to last that long in the business and to last that long at one place. I mean, you know, you've got to be doing a lot right, not just winning, because, you know, you stay at that one place that long, somebody's going to be mad at you, surely, at some point, you know what I mean? And, or somebody, you know what I mean? So just to last that long, or you're going to be mad at somebody and just say, I don't want to coach you anymore.
Surely you played the wrong person at some point.
Yeah, exactly. You know, but no, I said, so the longevity is impressive. But we could talk all day about how good a coach she is, obviously, to win that many games. But I heard a story one time. I'm going to tell this real quick. That the most impressive thing I ever heard about Laura Smith. I was talking to, and I hope he doesn't mind I say this, but I was talking to Brad Jeffers, who was a very successful coach at Alexander in their volleyball program. Of course, Shane, we had family that played on those teams, so we kind of followed him a little bit. And Brad won a state championship at Alexander. And he told me one time that one of the biggest helps to him getting started in his career and teaching him about the game of volleyball was Laura Smith. He said every time he had a question and called her, she answered it. She had suggestions for him. He'd ask her advice. She'd tell him. I want you to think about how classy and how unselfish that is, and what an ambassador this lady is for the game of volleyball. She's helping a guy who might beat her, knock her out of the tournament. You see what I'm saying? Who eventually built a very, very good program, who Adina had to go against every year at some point, usually. I mean, unless they were D4 or whatever, but a lot of years, you know. And she still went out of her way to make him better because she cares about the game of volleyball. She just wants to see volleyball better, you know. And how many coaches wouldn't do that? I mean, those are the people. Laura Smith's going to go down in history for her success, but really what people ought to think about her is how much better is volleyball today than when she started coaching? And I think if you answer that, you'll know a lot about her.
Well, there's no question. And guys, really enjoyed the show tonight. That's a great way to cap it off. And obviously SVC Sports Zone wants to congratulate Coach Smith. And obviously she's far from done as she continues to add 2, 3, 4 wins a week. So obviously, in closing here, we want to thank our sponsors, Valero, LC&B, Chris Good of the Good Health Chiropractic Center, YMCA, Adina Sports Medicine. We'll be getting our fall stats pages up and running here over the next week to 10 days. So until next time, for the great people at the Triple Crown Family Fun Center, for Bruce Knox and all the great people at DBK Media Services, for my co-hosts here, Matt Combs and Jeremy Ward, this is Shane Combs reminding you to keep visiting SVCSportsZone.com, where we are 100% SVC, 100% of the time.
You've been listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center, SVC Sports Talk. SVC Sports Talk is brought to you by SVCSportsZone.com and Triple Crown Family Fun Center. Join us next time for the Triple Crown Family Fun Center, SVC Sports Talk. And visit SVCSportsZone.com, where we're 100% SVC, 100% of the time.